Welcome to Radio Mojo Plus, brought to you by Pyology Pizzeria and by Southern Glaciers Wines and Spirits, proud supporters of the food and beverage industry in Hawaii.
Good morning and welcome to Radio Mojo Plus. I'm Joe McGarry, here to bring you the very best of eating, drinking, and living in Hawaii, as we do every Thursday morning. If you want to know more about what we do and our work with restaurants, then you can go to our website, mojomcgarry.com, and you can find all the information there. This morning, I'm just really excited about bringing you the show this morning. We have two guests, both of them with very important messages. One of them I've been waiting to talk to for months now. I'm a huge fan of Maui Nui venison and have been fortunate enough through Pono Pork and the amazing CSA boxes that they have been delivering. I've been able to take advantage of the Maui Nui venison that started to appear in their boxes, which is amazing, and I'm so appreciative of it. And through that, I wanted to learn more about this story. The Maui Nui venison story is so fabulous. It is just a model of sustainability, and I can't wait to talk to the co-founder this morning, Jake Muse, who some of you might remember as a volleyball player at University of Hawaii quite a few years ago now, but you'll remember. So I can't wait for that conversation this morning. It's going to be, I think, really fun. And I think if you don't yet know a lot about what's happening with Maui Nui venison, I think you're going to be absolutely amazed that the sustainable program is so advanced, and the meat itself is just incredible. So I'm really looking forward to that this morning. And then before that, we're going to talk to Ryan Tanaka. Ryan's the president of Island Business Management, and he has been really active in gathering support for not just local small businesses, but landlords too. And it's really important that we get support for both of these categories. So we're going to talk to Ryan this morning about how that initiative is going, and I'm going to really encourage you to listen up to how you can participate in that. Ryan and his group need 500 letters of support to go to the legislature by next week. We're actually hoping that we can get them all by tomorrow. And they are scratching the surface this morning. So we need your help. We need you to go online, find out more about this initiative, which is so worthy, and get in touch. Any small business owners that you know are really going to want to send in testimony for this. So two really important issues today. Very excited to be talking about both of them. And I hope you enjoy both of the conversations. And then after that, we'll have a little bit of time left, I think, to talk about some really awesome takeout. Of course, our restaurants, I do not need to remind you, are still closed, as are our small retailers and large retailers too. And, you know, I think there's been so much said about, you know, the lockdown, and everyone has their own very strong opinion on it. I think when it comes down to it, the one thing we just have to keep in mind is keep supporting local small businesses. I said to somebody yesterday when they were talking about fast food and drive-thrus and takeouts, I said, you know, if we only go there right now, that's all that will be left. And if you can imagine your favorite restaurants, if you can imagine them without just not being here, just completely disappearing because they're unable to keep their businesses going, you can't imagine it. So people keep throwing out this number. They throw out 25% of restaurants may close. 25 to 30% of restaurants may close. That is almost 1,000 restaurants in Hawaii. If you take the whole number of restaurants together, if you you know, include small food producers, little tiny mom and pops who are sometimes one and two person operations. Put all of them into the melting pot, and you are talking about the high hundreds of restaurants. Now, if you think of it that way, for me, every time one restaurant closes, I feel that that's a loss to the community. I mean, unless they're really bad, of course, but we hardly have really bad restaurants anymore. I think that if you look at your own community, your own neighborhood, where do you like to go to celebrate? Where are the restaurants important to you? Just imagine just a blocked up, boarded up, empty space. Because that is possible. That might happen if we are all not able to help each other through these next couple of months while we're waiting for tourism to recover. And, I think when this all started, everyone was as hopeful as restaurant people can be. They are the most resilient, the hardest of working people. And just the very nature of restaurant people, you know, they live with adversity. Every day there's something difficult that they have to cope with. It's just the kind of people they are. I think at the beginning there was a feeling that, yes, we'll do this. Yes, we can get through it. Yes, we can do anything. I think now a second lockdown has so deeply affected these restaurants. I can tell you from personal experience, I'm talking on a daily basis to restaurant owners. Some of them, they just don't have it in them to keep on going. You know, a restaurant is part of a community. You get up every day to open your restaurant to be of service. You don't just get up just to make food. It's such a hugely more important part of the community than that. And for people to do that and not know who's coming in or will they be allowed to open, it's really taking a toll. So this morning we're going to not be too dramatic, but we really do want to get your attention. We want you to listen to Ryan, our guest, when he comes up in just a little bit. And see, please listen and go online, and we'll give you all the information you need. If you are a small business owner, if you know small business owners, not just restaurants, but of course our focus is restaurants, then we want you to be able to get the information to them, get your testimonies in, make a noise, let everyone know you're listening. And this program is really fantastic because it does help landlords as well as tenants. You know, landlords get a really bad rap, you know. It's just too easy for people to say, oh yeah, the landlords are to blame and the landlords don't get it. Well, you know what? The landlords didn't cause this either. It's not the landlord's fault. So this program, this initiative, the rent relief program that we're going to talk about in just a minute, actually is designed to help both parties. And for me, that's the most important thing, that nobody is to blame in this. If you're a landlord, you're struggling in some cases just as much as your tenants are. And if you're a tenant, it's very hard for you to feel that the landlord actually wants to help. I know that because I'm working with it every day. But I can tell you that landlords are not to blame for this, and we need to help them as well as our tenants. So we're going to do all of that this morning and then throw in a little bit of our favorite foods and wines and get through our very, very short hour. So thank you for staying with us. I hope you enjoy the conversation this morning. What we're going to do right now is go for a really short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus.
You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu, 92.7 FM and 1420 AM.
Hey, welcome back to Radio Mojo Plus. I'm Joe McGarry. Good to be with you on this Thursday morning. We have a lot to talk about today. There's a lot of serious issues, obviously, that we're facing, and none more serious, in my opinion, than what is happening to our local small businesses. Ryan Tanaka is the president of Island Business Management, and he is leading an initiative to hopefully do something about this through the rent relief program. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
Hi, Joe. Good morning.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for taking some time to be with us today. So, Ryan, the rent relief program, you know, first of all, give us some background. I mean, it's very difficult to start these kind of initiatives and get movement behind them. Tell us a little bit of how this first started and the background.
Sure. Well, you know, the question we started with back in April, actually, is where else can you put federal CARES money that the state of Hawaii was going to receive that will have the greatest impact? And at that time, commercial rent immediately became a problem for the majority of businesses when the first government shutdown began in March. It's now September, so 5 complete months have passed, and the commercial rent situation continues to get worse, right? I mean, we're in a second government shutdown for another week, probably longer, and prioritizing public health is the right thing to do. But as we protect human life, key sectors that drive our economy have been put on this extended pause, placing so many of these businesses on life support. And one major repercussion is the added back rent that's piling up at an extraordinary pace for so many businesses. You know, on your show, you talk about restaurants, and thousands of restaurants and other businesses have had to close or partially close for the last 5 months. And think about all those jobs and supply chains. You know, we talked about this yesterday, Joe. So if the business couldn't pay rent during that period because they had little or no revenue, they would still owe the entire 5 months of back rent. And then there's a cost to reopen. Some businesses took strides to reopen in May and June if they were lucky. They pivoted their business model, marketed through social media. No matter what they did, they're at half capacity at best and forced to close for a second time. You know, even at half capacity, the reality is most of them make far less because the public is still staying home, working from home, mm-hmm. and many households have less reliable income. So as businesses are trying to, you know, drop prices and invest in safety equipment to attract new customers, they still face the high cost of sales, payroll, rent, utilities, bank payments, other overhead. The situation as a whole just doesn't add up. And it's resulting in businesses closing everywhere.
So I think this is one of the things that was sort of alarming right from the beginning, Ryan, is that you didn't have to be a math genius to realize that if people couldn't pay their rent in month 1, 2, and 3, they were definitely not going to be able to pay 1.5 times rent or twice as much rent, which is what some of the landlords were hoping to get back, in months 4, 5, and 6. I think what's been missing in this really devastation is the fact that there needs to be a plan that helps both the landlords and the tenants. So far, the landlords have been trying to get their rent because they need to for various reasons, and the tenants have been saying, we can't pay it. Your relief program, I think, really does hit that balance. Can you explain to us how you came up with the idea that landlords need to benefit so tenants benefit, and how it's going to work?
Yeah, great question, because, you know, just like you said, there's the other side of the coin. Landlords also have fixed expenses, and up until now, there's no direct relief for them during COVID. They still have to pay their insurance, utilities, real property taxes, and they also have to invest in keeping their buildings and common areas safe to the public. At the same time, you can't squeeze blood out of a turnip. You can't make people pay when they have no money. So what, you know, our idea, our concept that our, you know, business coalition has come up with is we're trying to convince the city to provide rent relief to businesses. The way that it would work is the landowners would apply on behalf of their eligible tenants, but the money would be paid directly to the businesses. So this would force a positive dialogue and get them talking about the right things, which is using the money to pay down some of the back rent and then setting new expectations going forward into this new normal. So this communication would help businesses to work out better terms and extend their runway. And we're trying to say, you know, let's base it on your property taxes for the property. That's the grant amount that you're able to get.
Because, of course, that's something that the landlords can't just stop paying. So I've always said that I think there is an extraordinary breakdown of communication largely between tenants, property managers, and the actual landlords. And I don't think it's anyone's fault. I just think it's the nature of, especially in the food industry and the restaurant industry, that there's so much miscommunication that half the time tenants don't even know what their rent is for. They don't know what their costs are. They don't know what's going on. And when you have a situation when it's not that easy to understand what you're actually paying, when you start to run short of money, it makes that situation so much more difficult, I think. Yes?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, this has been a tremendous disaster, right? So just like you pointed out, restaurants, retail, hospitality, entertainment, even healthcare have been some of the hardest hit sectors. But this pandemic is affecting everyone. And under normal circumstances, this type of program, you know, helping landlords and tenants, it wouldn't be necessary because of that symbiotic relationship between landlord and tenant inherently relying on each other. But it's when government orders to close the economy for public safety is the reason driving businesses into this hardship and forcing them to close for a period of time beyond that which is reasonable and recoverable, we're saying the government should also help. And this program to pass rent relief forward is one way to do it. And hey, let's use federal CARES money that would need to be returned if they don't find ways to spend it.
Yeah, and that's a problem too, isn't it, Ryan? Sometimes a lot of the frustration comes because there appears to be money there, but where is it going? How is it being spent? I think anyone who's lived in Hawaii for a very long time understands that frustration. So this is a way of utilizing money, utilizing government money, and getting it hopefully into the right hands. Ryan, there's a lot of people getting involved in this and getting behind you and the hard work that you're doing. Tell us some of the people who are coming to the forefront to support this initiative, and then we'll talk about what everyone else can do to help.
Sure. Our group is growing. It includes a number of trade associations, NIOP, for real estate professionals, you know, Brian Lee, Kathy Kemp, the Hawaii Restaurant Association, Retail Merchants of Hawaii, Hawaii Lodging and Tourism Association, Chamber of Commerce, Hawaii Food Industry Association, and also a number of individual experts among so many others. I may have missed a few, but this is a growing group with many contributors, and all of us care about Hawaii's future. We all want to see our local businesses and our hardworking employees most affected by this pandemic get the help they need to survive.
Ryan, you guys did a survey kind of at the beginning of this just to get a pulse on what was happening. I think the results of that survey were really fascinating and extremely worrying. I mean, just to give people an example, only 2% of rental agreements have actually been restructured right now as we try and carry on through this. That shows you that almost 100% of landlords and tenants don't really know how to move forward. We have never seen a situation like this before. What were your takeaways from the survey that you did? Do you think that we are actually in much more serious trouble than people realize?
Yes, and we noticed the same thing as you. Despite changing market conditions, landlords continue to expect their business tenants to follow pre-COVID rent schedules and to pay the same or an even higher rent by tacking on a payment plan for the unpaid back rent. So just like you said, right, only 2% were able to restructure their lease. We actually, going back to that question, you know, where else can you put federal CARES money that will have the greatest impact? We did conduct this statewide commercial rent survey with DBED and many partner organizations back in July. So for anyone listening, the survey report is public and can be downloaded at ibmhawaii.com. The survey represents 1,234 businesses and about 30,000 jobs. So we diagnosed the need for commercial rent after all of the other financial aid programs such as PPP, EIDL, the city's Small Business Recovery and Relief Fund, and even bank deferrals were accounted for. You know, one thing to add to your point about the only 2% have been able to restructure their lease, our survey considered these two separate time periods. And during the second period, from July to December, we discovered that one in five expect to miss between 4 to 6 months of full rent. So for 20% of businesses, you know, the last five complete months of unpaid rent for some of them is actually optimistic. And by year end, those 5 months could become 9 months and possibly longer if the pandemic continues into next year. So this is a growing, you know, major problem.
And I think that's the thing that we're seeing in a lot of cases. I was talking about this earlier this morning. For so many people who are so resilient and so hardworking and so able to cope with almost anything, this is different because it just has the feeling that it's not going to go away for a really, really long time. And that, I think, makes it different from anything that we've ever seen. And, of course, because our focus is always on restaurants, for restaurants to look to a future where they're still not able to pay rent or their rent is increasing or they're missing payments, it isn't how they work. It's not who they are. And I think all of those things psychologically are having such a huge effect. Ryan, we need to get to the good stuff. How can people help? Where can we go to lend our support? Please tell us about the initiative and where you are today and what you need.
Sure. To give you some background, last Wednesday, an economic assistance committee within the city and county of Honolulu passed Resolution 20-208. So this resolution, 20-208, urges the mayor's office to establish a commercial landlord tenant grant program, again, using federal CARES money sitting on the sidelines to provide businesses specifically with rent relief, especially those businesses hardest hit by COVID-19. Moving forward, next Wednesday, September 9, City Council will vote on this resolution. So our business coalition is gathering individual written testimonies to support Reso 208.
Now, you need a lot. You need at least 500. I'm saying at least because I would like us all to blow that number away and really make an impact. But you must have 500. And how many do you have right now?
The count as of this morning, let's see, total of 62 is where we're at.
Okay. All right.
Yes,
so
500 is a number that was requested by our, you know, some of our council members who are behind this, and they would like to see a situation where the mayor actually takes action. So they're saying that at least, just like you said, 500 is that critical number. If it's 500 business owners and landowners, so for any of you who are listening, if you're worried about your situation, maybe you're having sleepless nights, and you want to participate in providing written testimony, you know, for example, if you want to speak out because this impacts you or affects you, there is an urgency to this, and we're trying to gather testimonies by next week, Tuesday.
Okay, next week, Tuesday. Monday is a holiday, so really, guys, we have to get to work today and tomorrow to make this happen. Now, Ryan, I want to make people aware, it's very important, this is not a petition. This is not something that you want people just to sign. We want testimony, written testimony, from small business owners, landowners, people who are affected directly by this. And you guys have been super helpful. So is there a website they can go to? Can they just email you directly to get more information on how they can get testimony or make testimony, or is there somewhere else they can go?
There's no website, but people can reach out to me by email, ryan@ibmhawaii.com, or by phone, 224-5418, and I can send you a support letter template, which is very easy and user-friendly. You know, Joel, yes, we are looking for authentic testimony, but the entire process takes less than 5 or 10 minutes.
It's really, really well organized, and I am going to give you Ryan's email and phone number again a couple of times before the end of the show, so don't worry about that. And then, as you know, our show is podcast, so if you're missing it, if you have to jump out of your car right now, don't worry. This one will be up by end of day today, I promise, because this is really important. And you'll be able to get the details there wherever you find your podcasts. Ryan, I know this has been keeping you extremely busy. Usually, especially in a place like Hawaii, when we all need to come together and things are really dire, there is actually a feeling of sort of hope and community and the fact that, you know, we can get things done. Do you feel that right now? Do you feel that with this initiative that there's a lot of positive energy around it and that people are going to come together and make it happen?
I'm seeing both sides of the, of the equation. There's a group of people who still have tremendous hope. They know that at some point the market will recover. You know, Hawaii has proven to be resilient over the decades, and we faced similar challenges, maybe not similar, but we faced, drastic challenges and overcame them together. But like you said, it does take us really, bringing ourselves together and staying humble. And, we see that Resolution 20-208 is an important starting point.
Ryan Tanaka is the president of Island Business Management. You can contact him via email, ryan@ibmhawaii.com. Is there anything that I've forgotten to mention that's critically important?
No, the main thing that we try to remind people is the more businesses we can save, the faster the post-COVID recovery will be.
Absolutely. And the more local businesses we save, the more we keep Hawaii with its incredibly unique energy and personality. As I said to someone the other day, much as we all appreciate our fast food restaurants and national chains, if you don't support your local restaurants, that might be all that is left. Ryan, it was a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you so much for talking to us, and we hope to see those 500 testimonies ready by, imagine if it was end of day tomorrow, Friday. Best of luck.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Joe. We're all in this together. Thank you again.
Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye. Ryan Tanaka, President, Island Business Management. You can call him. He very generously said you could. His number is 224-5418. Or email him will be easier, ryan@ibmhawaii.com. And then you can see a little bit more, too, about what Ryan does with his business, Island Business Management. As the name suggests, he works with people's assets and helps you manage your finances. So, a good initiative is taking money not from anywhere except the CARES program. So it's money that's there. This is a way of spending it to get rent relief for small local businesses, and it will also help out landlords. And we need to help both. We have to help landlords help their tenants. These are amazingly challenging times, but we can do it. I'm convinced of it. So if you know a small business, if you are a small business owner, if you are friends with a small business owner, please contact them today and say their testimony, which will take less than 5 minutes, is absolutely critical to getting this done. So, all right, we're going to go for a break. Please stay with us. We'll see you. You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus.
This is Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu.
Welcome back to Radio Mojo Plus. I'm Joe McGarry. It's nice to be with you on this Thursday morning. We have a lot to talk about. Obviously, some really serious issues. And before we end the show today, I am going to give out the details again about that rent relief initiative, because I know that many of you listening are small business owners, or certainly you are supporters of local small business, and we want to get that initiative all tied up with all those 500 testimonies by tomorrow, if we can. All right, that's a little bit optimistic, but I think we can do it. I have been looking forward to having this conversation with Jake Muse for about a month or longer. I am a huge fan of Maui Nui venison. It's an extraordinary meat, and the story of how it's farmed is equally fascinating. Jake Muse is the co-founder and partner in Maui Nui Venison, and we finally got him to join us. Hey, good morning, Jake. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm great. How are you?
Really good, and so happy to talk with you this morning. The story of Maui Nui Venison is so fascinating. I have read as much as I can about it. It's just a gorgeous, amazing story of sustainability. Can you tell us a little about, the story is so great. It goes all the way back to 1868, right, when eight deer were brought to the islands. Tell us a little bit how we went from hopefully bringing in some deer to having an explosion of deer and your involvement in that.
Sure. So the brief history is, like you mentioned, it started in 1868 with they brought over six survived the long journey from India, and they were introduced to the island of Molokai, and a couple was placed on those deer for 10 years. And it's amazing. The next record we have is in 1901. They had already brought in a company from California to call animals. And in that record, they said there's almost 5,000 deer were killed in 1901. So they quickly, very quickly became, I'm sure, both a food resource and an issue. And they talked specifically about how they were having such a detriment on the forest. So Molokai, just based on the research we've been able to do and our population assessments, we think Molokai reached carrying capacity in about the 40s and 50s. And since then, those populations have only been going essentially up and down with available feed. If you have a great year of rain and there's more feed available, there's less fawns that are dying, and that population would just fluctuate. But in 1920, the then owners of Lanai thought it was a good idea to introduce axis deer to Lanai. Axis deer were introduced to Lanai. Again, based on our research, looks like they reached carrying capacity in the 60s and 70s. Lanai currently has about 20,000 deer. Molokai currently has anywhere from 50 to 70,000 deer. Then, interestingly enough, I guess we hadn't learned our lesson yet, the state of Hawaii introduced deer to Maui in the late 60s. And it's a really interesting story there is they actually had deer in a pen on Lanai ready to come to both Maui and to Hawaii Island. And the Cattlemen's Association, and there's this amazing write-up, my wife can do a much better job explaining it, of these people from across, national parks across the U.S., all of the Cattlemen's Association on the Hawaii Island said, absolutely not, do not bring them over here. And they were able to stop deer being introduced to Hawaii Island, but they were introduced at that time to Maui. And Maui currently has, went from a population of 7 to anywhere between 40 and 50,000 deer right now. But Maui's on course to have about 210,000 deer in the next 25 to 30 years.
Just mind-blowing numbers.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
And interestingly enough, what makes it so prolific is obviously there's the very obvious, it's in Hawaii and there's great weather and there's no stress and we obviously don't have predators. But they also happen to introduce one of the only deer species in the world that's capable of breeding year-round. So a really great example is a particular type of deer called a black-tailed deer was introduced to the island of Kauai in the 70s as well, and you can hardly find them. They're extremely elusive. Populations haven't exploded. So not only did they introduce a particular deer to Maui that is, as you're learning, great-tasting, but it happens to be one of the most prolific deer species on the planet. So a combination of all those things make it a concerning issue for sure.
So you have two sort of major things here. You have an incredible food source that is dense in protein, really a fantastic meat, and then you have a highly invasive species that needs controlling. So it obviously needs the culling and us buying and eating the deer is absolutely the next natural step, which is, I assume, where you all stepped in. Was there a point where, I mean, obviously you were over there, you were at University of Hawaii, weren't you, playing volleyball?
It started, I was at the University of Hawaii and I was introduced to axis deer I was adopted. It was a Hanai family on Molokai I lived on the east coast of Canada, so I wasn't able to travel to and from. And I was so lucky to be adopted by a family on Molokai. So I was introduced to this animal, like, first and foremost as a recreational and subsistence hunter, which I grew up doing in northern Canada, and probably would have starved through college without being able to bring deer meat back. So we started at a place where we had a profound respect for the animal, and we love this animal. But as I started to learn more about it, I realized it obviously already had immense value, but there were greater issues that came along with it. And as a hobby turned into an obsession that then turned into a nonprofit, just so I could collect information out of studies coming out of India. And that nonprofit then turned into a business when Axis deer were introduced to Hawaii Island illegally in 2009 or 2010, I believe. Mm-hmm. And we were able to successfully remove those deer that were illegally introduced to the Big Island. And invasive species projects in Hawaii don't always go well, and usually there's millions of dollars spent and not a lot of solutions. But we happened to do that really well, and that's what introduced us to some of the large landowners on Maui that saw that we had a solution to, at a minimum, very accurate like population assessments, so we had a good handle on the population, and we understood population dynamics. And they said, like, just come and shoot them. And we said, well, we can't do that.
Right.
Like, there has to be a better way to do this. And then as soon as that, like, thought enters your head, like, there has to be a better way to do this, that started the very, very long process of, like, the first call to the federal government to say, like, hey, can we do this? And, like, them mm-hmm. saying no. And then you calling again and them saying no. You just keep calling until we were able to create some guidelines to at least start the process. And then it's been a very long process over the last now 7 years to have this be a complete USDA process where we can now, we're at scale and have the appropriate USDA staffing that we can start to grow and hopefully address and work towards balancing the population.
We're talking with Jake Muse. He's one of the co-founders, owner of Maui Nui Venison. Jake, I think amongst many of the really impressive ways that you guys run Maui Nui is the way that you are able to, between your mobile slaughter facility and your infrared tracking, I have rarely seen an operation where stress-free farming really seems to be in existence. I mean, there really seems to be a lifestyle for these animals that is completely stress-free and wild, and then it's done, and your slaughter facility is just amazing. I know people hate using that word, right? You're always supposed to use a different word, but why not? I mean, that's what it is. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, you're very forward-thinking. I think I want everybody to know what you guys are doing because it's just extraordinary, and I think that's why the meat tastes so amazing. So tell us just a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, first, thank you so much. We always... I think we worked really hard to create that process, and we always really appreciate when it connects with people. I think that started because I think we started as hunters that had like a profound respect and love for this animal. So when we designed what was going to be our commercial harvesting process, there were options to pen them up in 200 acre pens. But we knew the animal so well that we knew even within a very, very large pen, if they knew they were constrained, they were going to be stressed out. And it just was never, it was never an option for us. So we built our harvesting strategy around that. And that meant we had to be able to meet all of the requirements of a brick and mortar facility, but in the field. So that infrared technology allows the inspector to view the animal with such detail. I mean, they can tell if they're pregnant, if there's like a cyst on the side, like they have such great situational awareness for the health of that animal. So it allows them to make the judgment call to be able to harvest that animal. And then we then have to operate at the same proficiency as a brick and mortar facility as well to be able to render or kill that animal properly. And so we've, over the last 7 years, trained extensively to be able to do that. And what that allows is that animal to be truly wild until the second it's harvest. It means we don't have to pen it, we don't have to bait it, we don't have to bring it into a particular area. We start each night knowing they're there, knowing they're in the area, but never knowing for sure where we might find them. But we've developed a process that it just allows us to harvest enough and it be efficient enough each night. And the mobile slaughter facility is what plays such a key role there. Is as we move from area to area, if we were moving from these areas and we had to go back to a fixed facility, we only have 3 hours to harvest and bring these animals and have them slaughtered and cleaned and in the freezer or in the chill. So being able to bring that with us is also what allows that process to occur and for us to not have to make the choice to pen these animals. And then, you know, technology is changing so quickly. We started with that process, but now we have infrared drones in the air every single night that allows us to even like have more information each night. And it really does, like that animal having absolutely no stress has an extraordinary impact on the quality and taste of that meat. That animal not having any stress and not seeing any, you know, additional lactic acid buildup in that process, it does. Like we know it makes a big difference, and I think it's something we're really proud of. And you know, it's an interesting thing. Like each night, this is a wild animal, and where we shoot it, you know, we have to carry these animals on our back, like every single night, to get them back to a truck and back to a facility. So, you know, there's still a strong connection with them. We really enjoy the process each evening. And I know, having been in lots of other slaughter facilities, sometimes that's not the case. So, yeah.
Right, exactly. And you know what? I want to encourage everyone to go to your website, because I think the story that you tell on your website immediately starts to draw people in. And I think, you know, we're having such a hard time in Hawaii right now, and there's just so much going on that people feel that they're not in control of. And I think, you know, looking at your website, and you guys, it's MauiNuiVenison.com, I think it shows such a beauty of what can be done agriculturally in Hawaii with people who are determined and devoted and won't give up. And for us to be able to now have access to this food source of such high quality, I really feel so hopeful when I look at your website. And I want everyone to go there this morning and take a look, because it really is tells a wonderful story. Jake, we got to get to the wonderful meat and how people can get it. Now, I know that going to your website is one way that people can order boxes and have subscriptions. I'm so happy to say that Pono Pork over here, Bob McGee and his wife, are now distributing it through CSA boxes. So a lot of people are being introduced to Maui Nui for the first time because they're buying Pono Pork, which is awesome. What are some other ways that people can buy and order and just taste this wonderful product?
So obviously, like you mentioned, they're able to go to the website, but I do want to mention on the website there is a Kamaaina page, and we specifically structured our pricing on the venison that was headed east towards the continent to make sure that it was priced well enough that the venison locally was discounted pretty heavily. So somebody can get venison via the website at $8 a pound, and that's only for Hawaii residents. That's important to us. Like, our strategy is everything can go east and it can be direct to consumer, and it's priced appropriately that we can support things here in Hawaii. You know, we were, when COVID hit, you know, one of the first phone calls we got was from the food bank, and you know, we had the means to help. So I think we just passed 25,000 pounds in donations to the food banks.
Wow.
But that's always been our strategy, is make sure that it's available. It's a local resource. Like, we believe in that strongly. We want it to be available here locally. And so that's part of the next steps, is bringing on board folks like, you know, Pono Pork, Jessica Rohr with Forge Hawaii, She does a whole bunch of the farmers markets. She's been doing it for 2 years now. She's fantastic. Brandon Lee at Kahnemono Farms on the Big Island has a CSA box as well. He does amazing Berkshire pork. We've just gone into that box as well. We're now looking at, you know, options for wholesale, and we're only looking in Hawaii. Everything else on the continent will continue to be DC, but if somebody wants to have venison here locally, we want them to find ways to do that for sure.
That's so wonderful. And again, I'm encouraging everyone to go to the website, find that Kama'aina page, and you will really be astounded at the price. It's really fantastic. We thank you for that. Jake, I knew that I would talk to you for a long time and still run out of time and still have way more to talk to you about. But I want to thank you so much for this. For many people, I think this is an introduction for them to Maui Nui venison. I am so delighted and just so appreciative that we're able to benefit from being able to support you and buy this amazing product. And thank you so much for all the work that you and your wife and your family have done over these years to get to this point, because it's truly a sustainable and really beautiful agricultural business that Hawaii should be very proud of. Thank you so much.
Well, we really appreciate the kind words, and you know, thank you so much for everything that you're doing, you know, particularly at this time. It's having conversations of sustainable ag in Hawaii is important, and I think we can't have them enough. It doesn't matter if it's us or other great companies. So, you have a platform to do so, and we appreciate that you're able to do that. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care, and we hope one day to be over there seeing the amazing ranch for ourselves. Thank you, Jake.
Aloha, Joe.
There you go. I told you that was going to be a fun conversation. Go to the website, mauinuivenison.com. He's not kidding. The Kama'aina page, it has Kama'aina pricing that is, I think, a third of what the regular pricing is. And I'm a huge fan. I use it whenever I can find it. I buy it. My family love it. They think that I have become a better cook. And it's not. I do less with the Maui Nui venison than I've ever done with any other meat, and it is just absolutely fantastic. You will love feeding this to your family, and how wonderful of them to be supporting the food bank. So there you go. I told you we'd have a feel-good story for you today, and that was it. I have to go for a really short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus.
You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu, 92.7 FM and 1420 AM.
Hey, welcome back to Radio Mojo Plus. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. I hope you enjoyed our two guests. I knew I would run out of time and just have so much more to talk to them about. But two important issues, I think, today. Sustainability and agriculture. Go to mauinuivenison.com. If you have not discovered this incredible agricultural program, you will be blown away by the website. And just the video itself is captivating. And Ryan Tanaka, who has headed up this incredible rent relief program. It's coming to its peak. We've got to get those testimonies in. Call or email him, ryan@ibmhawaii.com. I want to thank him for taking some time this morning to explain the rent relief program, which will benefit landlords and tenants, and it's just something that we need to do here in Hawaii. So call your friends, call your favorite restaurants, call everybody. I will see you next week on Radio Mojo Plus. I'm Joe McGarry. See you next time.
Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu was brought to you by Pieology Pizzeria and by Southern Glazier's Wines and Spirits, proud supporters of the food and beverage industry in Hawaii.